Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, here's a question for you. Is the next public pay deal a risk to the economy? Well, an Oireachtas report suggests the growing population and increased wage demands could mean that it is. This report was prepared by the Parliamentary Budget Office, which is an independent and specialist unit within the Oireachtas. It monitors economic and budgetary matters. It lists a number of risks that the next Parliament will face in what it describes as a complex fiscal landscape. But should a deal paying the workers who operate the most fundamental and necessary services in the state ever be in question or considered a risk, even if that wage bill increases? Well, joining me for more on this, I've got Ruth Coppinger, who's People Before Property, Profit Solidarity TD for Dublin West, and Edgar Morganrath, who's Professor of Economics at DCU. And you're both welcome. Thank you for coming in this morning. Edgar, I'll come to you first, because the next public sector pay deal, it won't be negotiated until 2026. But what we're hearing is that it could involve an annual increase in the state wage bill of 1.66 billion euro. Now, does that represent a risk to the economy, in your opinion?
So I think we need to look at a number of issues here. Firstly, how much can we afford to pay? And there we always have trade-offs. We can pay our workers more and then maybe do something else, less of something else, and so on. So in principle, it's always affordable. We could always raise more taxes and so on. When it comes to the actual pay deal, again, we need to think about how high that might be. And we've only, we're not even a year into the latest deal. So it's very early to speculate about how much we might end up raising wages mm-hmm. by. And that ultimately will depend on how much inflation we see in the meantime. Inflation has come down. But we don't know what the future holds. And of course, the negotiating power of the different parties. And then we have to remember that with a growing population and issues in particular sectors, we are going to have to hire more nurses, more doctors.
So the state's going to have to suck up this bill, you're saying?
The state, or in fact, the taxpayer will ultimately have to pay for it if they want the services provided. Mm-hmm. And there's no such thing as a free lunch. So if we want more nurses and doctors, if we want more guards on the street, they don't come free.
Yes, but if that figure of 1.66 represents a threat to the economy, where is the line? Is there a line?
Well, again, if you look at that report, it raises a whole range of kind of fiscal issues, both on the expenditure side and also on the tax raising side. And if we look at the current situation, it's probably as good as it gets from a fiscal perspective. We have pretty much no unemployment in terms of, this is a transitional mm-hmm. unemployment, but unemployment is very low. We have very buoyant tax revenues, growth in the economy. That's unlikely to stay like that forever. If we know anything, we know that we are subject to cycles.
So more money has to be raised, you're saying, on a more sustainable
basis. At some point, we will
basis.
Not be as flush with money in the public purse. Mm-hmm. And that's when the issues arise. At the moment, it's not a big deal. In the future, it could be an issue. And then we're going to have to make difficult choices as to where we want to put the money.
Okay, so that's really what it comes down to, isn't it, Ruth? I mean, we want people to stay working in the public sector. Those people understandably want to be paid well. It's going to cost. It has to be paid for. So something has to change when it comes to taxation. Would you agree with all of that?
I'd absolutely agree that we cannot have decent public services unless we tax the wealth that we have in society. So let's step back for a minute. We're talking about the people who are out clearing our roads right now. We're talking about emergency services. We're talking about nurses in hospitals. We're talking about teachers in our freezing schools right now. We're talking about therapists to help disabled children. All of these are not a risk to the economy. They're essential to society. And they're also essential to the economy because, for example, the teacher shortage is a threat to the economy if it continues, because We're losing things like construction studies. We're losing languages. So actually, you know, we actually do need these. I would challenge the tone of this report. I think the alarmist tone, for example, the pay increases that are left due is 1% of overall state expenditure of 104 billion. So it's actually a small amount of money in relative terms. And half of that comes back to the exchequer in terms of taxation, because public sector workers, particularly lower paid, spend their money in the economy. It's not like putting it into corporations.
So you would argue the point that this report makes, that this increase, if it is 1.66 billion in 2026, you would argue that that represents a risk to the economy. You're saying that the focus is on the wrong place.
Absolutely. It doesn't represent a risk, but also the size, the population increase has been mentioned. It also gives the impression that public sector workers get pay increases in line with the private sector, which they actually haven't traditionally. So, for example, public sector pay has remained largely the same, trying to catch up after the austerity era. And private sector pay has gone up about 17% in the same time. Mm-hmm. So I would actually query some of the figures. But
Let's talk then. If you agree that in principle these wages will need to go up, we could argue about how much. Where does the additional money come from to pay for that, Ruth?
Okay, well, last year, for example, figures came out from the central bank showing that net household wealth in Ireland had risen just in one quarter by 33 billion. We have enormous wealth in this society. Corporation tax profits tripled in the last number of years. The problem is that the tax base is too narrow. It is reliant upon certain sectors. And it has to be enlarged, but not among ordinary workers who are already at the pin of their collar, trying to meet housing costs, cost of living costs. We have a very unequal society. So, for example, Oxfam had figures that show 1% controls 35.4% of wealth in Ireland. Two billionaires have the same wealth as 50% of the population. If we want to have decent public services, and we need to actually enhance them, because we've a teacher shortage, a nursing shortage, as we know, we have to tap that wealth. Otherwise, it cannot be done. Now, corporation tax, as we know, we have a tax haven in Ireland with, you know, a huge amount. The effective tax rate on corporations was 6-7% in recent years. That has to increase. It has to increase to the 15% that the OECD recommended.
More tax from corporations, but you started by saying tax the wealthy more. Edgar, do the figures add up in your view?
So there's some very interesting work on wealth taxation done by a former colleague of mine at the ESRI a few years back, looking at what you might bring in through different types of wealth taxes. And unless you tax the principal private residence, you're actually not going to bring in very much. That's the first thing. So we can tax that wealth. And in fact, the increase in wealth was mostly through increase in house values. So, you know, we can do that. That's a political choice.
You're talking about a tax beyond the property tax. You're talking, because people will be listening to this saying, I already pay a tax on my home, my local property tax. You're saying an additional tax would be the only way to target that wealth. Is that what you're saying?
That is what is done in other countries. And go to France or Switzerland, that's what they do. It's a political choice whether we want to do that or not. If we don't want to tax the housing wealth, which is the greatest share of wealth out there, we're not going to bring in very much with a wealth tax. And corporation tax obviously has been exceedingly buoyant. And, you know, it is something that has propped up our tax take over the last number of years. But if you look at what's happening in the world, there may be some very big changes on the way with how US corporations are going to be taxed. And that could evaporate very, very quickly, that corporation tax surplus. So if we don't have that and we're not bringing in much in wealth taxes, we're not really able, unless we try different kinds of taxes, to raise tax revenue.
Ruth, can I ask you about what you see when you talk about taxing the wealthy? Edgar says you can really only do it successfully through an additional property tax. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree. I think, you know, that's always trotted out that actually we can't find this wealth, we can't go after this wealth. There's a number of ways that it can be done. Obviously, we have people who are on 100,000, which, you know, is a significant amount of money, but that could be also anything over that. You could increase the tax bands.
Mm-hmm. Edgar, why are you shaking your head there?
They're not the richest people in society. For example, Oxfam has pointed out that anything over 4.7 million should have a wealth tax of 2%, and that would bring in about 8 billion. Mm-hmm. On corporation tax, we have to question whether...
No, I just want to stick with the wealth tax. I want to just bottom this out, because Edgar, you reacted there when you heard Ruth talking about people on over 100,000.
So essentially what we're looking at here is not a wealth tax, but an income tax. And if we look at where income tax comes from, the bulk of the income tax comes from the 10% highest earners. And it's actually, and again, that the report by the Parliamentary Budget Office points to this. The income tax system is exceedingly narrow compared to other jurisdictions. And if you look at other countries, actually, there's a higher tax burden on the income side to lower income earners than in Ireland. And we have a uniquely redistributive income tax system here. So we're already taxing the high earners in income very, very highly.
Ruth?
The conclusion that we will come to is that we have a very buoyant economy, we have massive resources, but we actually just can't provide public services. That's the conclusion of what you're saying. There always seems to be this hopeless stance when it comes to going after the wealth that's there. It doesn't apply, for example, to social welfare, fraud, or, you know, the lower layers in society. I think that if we applied, for example, the corporation tax, but there's massive loopholes throughout society. There's vacant home taxes that we could apply. You know, there's multiple properties, 166,000 in society, which we need for housing, that are being left derelict. We could apply taxes on a whole range of different things.
Yeah, Edgar, is it enough to say we can't go after that wealth, you know?
Vacant home tax, I'm all for it. Dual property owners, yes, again. The issue is, we can raise more tax, but we have to think about what the effects are and also how much you're going to get if you're trying to raise a tax in fairly narrow areas. And the problem is, if we really want to massively increase public services, we're going to have to increase taxes on the bulk of the population, mm-hmm. not just a very, very narrow sector. And that's ultimately a political choice as to whether we want to do that or not.
And Ruth, we're coming to the end now, but just to touch on corporation tax, you heard Edgar explain there, and we're all aware of this, that things are changing and could change radically with Donald Trump's second term in the White House. Is now the time to change our corporation tax policy?
Well, for years we've had this policy of low or no taxes on corporations, not even going after the effective tax rate, as I said, about 6-7% on average. We have to raise corporation tax. Why is it justified that we have children waiting 7.5 years in my area to see a therapist if they're autism or if they have a disability? And yet a corporation is paying low or no tax whatsoever. Apple was only one example. The effective tax rate, as I said, needs to increase. If we applied a 20% corporation tax, we could bring in 80 billion euros in this country. And the employment opportunities...
Is there not an inherent risk, though, in doing that? Do you accept that?
Well, the employment that's created is actually overrided by what we are losing to society in Ireland in terms of the revenue that we could be getting from these corporations. So it's always been pointed out how much employment they create, but it's never pointed out how much revenue they're generating and not putting back into this society.
Edgar, quick response to that before we finish.
Again, those companies are actually generating the bulk of income tax revenue. And again, there's research on this. I guess that...
Well afford it, that's the point.
Well,
it's a fraction of what they have.
The issue of corporation tax is an interesting one. There have been changes. I don't think anyone can argue for any of the tax loopholes that existed in corporation tax, and it's good that they're gone, and if any exist, they should be pursued.
Okay. I'm going to have to leave that there, but thank you both for coming in. That was Ruth Coppinger and Edgar Morgenroth. Back after this quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.